From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for October 22nd, 2021. This Sunday at Lambeau, the Packers host the team from Washington, to be named later. And your Milwaukee Bucks are on the road until Wednesday when the Timberwolves come to town. In a recent TikTok video, an Indonesian woman, to protest her husband's laziness, cooked his favorite pet fish. The woman scaled, seasoned, and deep-fried the Asian arowana fish. These little suckers sell for as much as $300,000. She must have been angry. I wonder if that includes tartar sauce. Lots of companies are suffering through staffing shortages. In Northern Ireland, there's a shortage of clowns. And here in the U.S., we have an overabundance of clowns. The Irish might want to consider recruiting clowns and say, oh, I don't know, Washington, D.C. After midnight, a 79-year-old man crushed his mountain bike off the side of a bridge and got trapped in a storm drain. Well, he had a bad day. As we learned last week from the Book of Proverbs, nothing good ever happens after midnight. Let me take you back to high school. A Florida woman was arrested for being found naked in the back seat of a Jeep on the showroom floor. She said she was just checking to see if the back seat was roomy enough for two. And now for your poorly written headline of the week. Blind woman gets new kidney from dad she hasn't seen in years.
I liked it.
It was worth a groan. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Dave Sandstrom, Mike Helzel, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Market continued its rebound this week. NASDAQ up 1.3%, rising 193 points for the week to close at 15,090. S&P 500 climbed 1.7%, tacking on 75 points, several intraday highs during the week. S&P closed at 45.46 for the week. Dow Jones Industrial Average held back a little bit by poor results of IBM. Up 1.1% though for the week, tacking on 383 points. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week 35,677. Kyle, we got a pretty good year going here, really. NASDAQ up a whopping 17.6%. Broader markets up 22%, Dow up 18% in spite of what happened at IBM. IBM down almost 10%. So that's a quick look at the week in review. Kyle, as you know, stocks took a 5% hit in September. The 10-year backed up from 1.2 to 1.6, give or take, still at 1.6. We go into earnings season. You know, we're still early in the inning in terms of earnings announcements, but 81% of the companies have outperformed expectations. So it's as if we kind of forgot about our troubles and we're just marching on here.
Yeah, you know, I think earnings season is the thing we had been waiting for. I think markets had kind of been set adrift for much of September, looking at some inflation data, looking at some economic data that was maybe less robust than what we'd seen coming through summer. And all of a sudden, you have some questions. And then I think you get back to the fundamentals of the market. You get back to earnings, and all of a sudden, feeling a bit more optimistic about the path ahead. The stock market reflects that the last couple of weeks. We're about 20% into earnings season so far. But some of the biggest reports so far coming from banks, coming from some of the credit card processors. We had American Express today. Pretty positive news on what is roughly 15% of the credit card consumption on the American Express cards. They're pretty optimistic about the future. You go back to last week, you look at the big five banks, every one of those CEOs talking pretty optimistically about what they see coming down the road. And I think most importantly, we've got MasterCard and Visa next week, which is another roughly 65 or 70% of the credit card spend. Consumer spending drives the economy. Consumer spending a big part of the overall stock market as well. And so I think getting some more good news, and most importantly, some pretty rosy outlooks, granted, caveats in there with certain issues with supply chains, caveats in there with certain issues with the labor market, but cautiously optimistic for many of these CEOs. I think it paints a pretty strong picture for what we should be expecting if we can get through some of what, you know, some of these near-term challenges.
Specifically, fact set calendar year 2022, forecasting earnings growth of 9%. I'll take that all day long.
Yeah, and of course that 9% looked a little better back at the middle of the year. Keep in mind, it isn't that the overall or that the hard number got lower. It's that this year's numbers have gotten even better, right? We were talking about back in July, we were talking about what was really good earnings growth for full year 2021. That number's gotten 25% better since then in terms of what the growth rate looks like. And so I think as you consider that 2022 is still talking about 9%, that's a pretty strong number on the back of what we've added so far this year from where we thought we'd be. And so I think, you know, good reason to think that over the last 3 years we've added about 10 2/3% annualized in terms of earnings. You know, from 2019 through the end of 2022, based on current forecasts, good reason to think that that's fairly supportive of what stocks have done those past couple of years.
Dave, you and I confront client questions almost on an hourly basis about inflation. Bob, what's up with inflation? How is that going to force interest rates? What's up with the supply chain bottlenecks? And I'm so intrigued to see that in many areas of the economy, economic activity is quite a bit higher than it was pre-pandemic. You know, as you know, during the pandemic, a lot of people decided, well, you know, I don't know about buying services. We're not going to go out to eat. We're not going to go to the theater, sporting events. But let's buy stuff. And the amount of stuff we're buying collectively is quite a bit higher than pre-pandemic levels. So, you know, on top of that, the world's factories, for the most part, shut down a year ago last spring and summer. But on top of that, the fact that demand is significantly higher than it was in 2019, it's not a surprise to me to see bottlenecks. I mean, you got a manufacturing background. You've dealt with that all the time. What's your take on that?
Well, Bob, you point out something amazing is the fact that we did keep pace with the consumer spending in a time where we literally had to shut the entire world economy down, and coming back from that so quickly in really record-breaking fashion. You know, there are some areas of the market that are very hot in the economy, and we're seeing some, you know, price increases that are fairly staggering in some instances. I think one of the real interesting areas is, of course, housing, and that is one of the big drivers of the U.S. economy. When you look at everything that goes along with housing, when you start to rope in all the durable goods that have to be purchased for new houses, and you go right down to landscaping and you name it. But I think it's important to understand that the troubles we're having in housing as far as the backlog are a result of things that maybe even go back to the financial crisis. I mean, we lost a lot of small builders. We lost a lot of employees in the trades during that time when we had, you know, just a tremendous collapse in the housing market. So not only did we have all this pent-up demand from the pandemic, we were still kind of working our way back from that. So you're looking at a housing market that I think is going to be hot for quite a while. And that demand is going to take a while, I think, for the building community to catch up with where we're at. Just one anecdotal story. I talked to a client this week that as a small builder in the middle part of the state, and they only build about 25 homes a year, they currently have 100 homes under contract, and they've had to turn away as many as 200 people. So I know that's anecdotal, but it kind of just gives you a flavor for the type of demand that is currently out there in the housing market.
Mike, what's your take on current events?
Well, one of the stories I've been kind of looking at is Apple's new privacy laws and how it's kind of affecting some of the tech companies. Snapchat reported today that, pretty big earnings miss. And for those who don't know, Apple's new privacy settings basically allow users to not let ad revenue-based companies track you anymore. So it's one of those things that I'm kind of looking at to see how it's going to affect companies like Facebook, Twitter, you know, a lot of the tech companies that use ad revenue to really drive, like generate their earnings. I kind of talked to Kyle a little bit about it. And, you know, tech has really driven the market for the past few years, or I shouldn't say driven, but led the way for a lot of, for lack of a better term. And I think how seeing kind of how the tech companies evolve to keep generating ad revenue dollars, even with these new privacy issues, is going to be interesting to see who can survive and who can't. Because, I mean, as I've said, tech has really led the way for the market. So if those start to fall, I'm curious to see kind of what happens to markets and kind of people's perceptions of it going forward.
Joel, let's bring you into the show. Had kind of a miss on industrial production this last month.
Yeah, Bob, it's getting back to the whole bottleneck situation. You know, we've been waiting for semiconductors for the auto industry has, and to the point where they actually reduced their output in September by 7%, and that helped bring down the industrial production numbers. And so, you know, altogether, the economy is kind of slowing down a little bit, but it's still steaming ahead, as Dave pointed out, with housing. We also had numbers on that, and we had the numbers from the Commerce Department on housing starts and building permits, and those both slowed down from recent months, but they're still, you know, at levels that we haven't seen for 14 years. So there's demand out there. It's just harder to keep up. Just as there's demand for those automobiles, then they don't have the semiconductors to finish building the cars. The whole housing industry is still sort of trying to recalibrate and to gear up to the demand that's out there. I'm sorry, and just one other thing with the industrial production numbers is we always look at capacity utilization. I know that you point to that a lot as an indicator sort of the pipeline that's leading up to inflation. And that took a step back for the second month in a row. It's, you know, basically our industrial capacity in the U.S. is at like 75%. Historically, it's more like 80%. So when it gets above 80%, then you have to worry about inflation coming. And the fact that it stepped back a little, it might be a sign that, you know, maybe the inflation that we're seeing right now is, as, you know, Fed Chairman Powell this week said, you know, just sort of still a temporary thing.
My guess is by the time they figure out the chip shortage problem, the car industry is going to come roaring back, and that'll help power industrial production well into next year. Kyle, you know, we got to talk about inflation. There's so much on the news these days. Fed Chair Powell again the other day said he's a little bit more worried about inflation now because of the supply chain bottleneck issues. But I always like to rely on the financial markets, as you know, and the implied rate on 10-year tips is still 2.2%. If you look at the 10-year treasury, as we all know, the 10-year has averaged 5.5% for years. We're at 1.6. If big money was truly worried about inflation, you'd see the 10-year yield skyrocket. I always urge people to look at the yield on the 10-year treasury as much as you look at where the S&P or the Dow is. It's your canary in the coal mine when it comes to inflation. As you pointed out, I think a couple of weeks ago on the show, year-over-year comparisons on inflation, you have to be a little careful, because last year, people were locked up at home, so the prices were pretty low then. But I also want to throw into this question the price of oil. Wow. You know, oil is the highest in 7 years now. And the fact that that's not crimping consumer spending is almost unprecedented.
Yeah, maybe a couple of things to point out. President Biden mentioned Thursday night that he expects the price of oil to stay elevated for at least into 2022. And pointing to some oil-producing nations is maybe the cause for that. But I think the broader theme there and what you mentioned kind of at the end is that we haven't seen the same kind of consumption restraints that we've seen in other periods in which oil prices spiked pretty drastically. You know, I haven't looked at the data on this yet, but I would suspect that with more people working from home, you're probably seeing oil consumption or specifically gasoline consumption a smaller part of the average household budget, with more work from home available, it stands to reason, at least in my head, that you've got fewer people or more people with more options as far as how they spend those dollars when they don't have to spend them filling the gas tank. I think the other thing to keep in mind is that while Powell did indicate that he may be a little more concerned than he was in the past, that word transitory remains out there. I think the difference now is that transitory could be for a little longer than what we thought in the past. And I think transitory also implies that it's going to be in different areas at different points in time. And so while we've seen it make its way through the auto industry already, while we've seen it in energy prices, we're going to see it in some other areas as well. You're going to start to see it in grocery store prices. You're going to start to see it in maybe some consumer goods that you would purchase. But as we know, as a market economy, businesses are going to find ways to fill voids. They're going to find ways to meet demand, and that tends to push prices back down over time. And so the pendulum may have swung a little bit towards higher prices right now as businesses realize, you know what, I wasn't a producer of this particular good, but I can make good money doing it. I'm going to step in. All of a sudden now we've got more businesses competing on price again. And so I think, you know, this is a healthy thing for markets to go through these kinds of things. I think it shakes some of the overripe fruit maybe from the trees, gets you to plant some more trees as well so you can harvest more fruit. And so I think what we're seeing now, the fact that, you know, we still use the word transitory, I think encouraging sign that, yeah, it may persist for a little while longer, but long term it's going to mean more options. It's going to mean that we're more competitive.
Dave, let's jump over to China. A lot of articles in the papers this week about dollar-denominated high-yield property bonds in China. Market really almost ground to a halt. The bottom fell out. That was struck by the yields right now. You can get 21% interest on a high-yield China bond. Of course, the prices fell more than that, so that doesn't help you out a lot. But I was struck by the announcement early this week that GDP in China fell to 4.9% in the third quarter. Of course, that's still a pretty good number, but down quite a bit from their long-term average of plus 7% growth. So I think that, not only do we have the very real likelihood of additional defaults in the property sector in China, which is what drove their economy for so many decades, but we're also seeing overall the Chinese consumer now seems to be hunkering down. This is going to be a problem in the emerging world and perhaps spill over even to the U.S. at some point.
And Bob, it's interesting because it's kind of a little bit of a vicious circle, right? A giant part of the Chinese economy, as you point out, was the real estate area and, you know, people buying properties. But now with these defaults coming, it's really, really shaking the investors in the country to put their life savings into a piece of real estate that they were going to use for their retirement, knowing that maybe that building's not going to get built now if I pay in advance. And so now all of a sudden they start making those purchases and GDP's falling and it's kind of self-fulfilling. You know, as you point out, the junk bond market problems they had where they lost over 20% in a month's time, people have to realize that about 80% of the high yield market in China is tied directly to real estate. And so that's a significant problem that they have on their hands right now. And, you know, it certainly is a nice stark reminder to people here about, you know, being careful when you reach for yield because, you know, it's a really good reminder to investors that junk bonds, especially under today's constraints with interest rates where they're at, maybe not a place to take that kind of risk.
I was struck, Dave, by how many urban Chinese own their own homes. It's 90%. Off the top of my head, in the United States, I don't have urban rural numbers, but nationwide, I think home ownership is at about a 66% rate, give or take. So that's just phenomenal that 90% of urban Chinese, own their own homes.
Yeah.
Kyle, let's go back to you. I love going into November and December. They're two of my favorite months of the year for stocks. We normally get some kind of Santa Claus rally, although, you know, the S&P being up so much for the year, we could go sideways. I'd even be happy with that. Forecasting is difficult. I get the sense, though, that, you know, the economy is strong and couldn't even get stronger at a time when, you know, so many people are worried. I'm getting pretty upbeat for next year.
Yeah, I think cautious optimism is always kind of a pretty safe place to be as long as you're prepared for some of the worst that can happen, which, you know, I think is the way we've always thought about building portfolios, right? You've got that piece that's prepared for the worst, but you use cautious optimism to drive kind of the rest of the decision making. And, you know, in particular, as we look through the end of this year, we're seeing some pretty accelerated sales for the holiday season now, as so many retailers have said, hey, go out and buy those Christmas presents now. Don't wait till Max, don't wait till the 24th again to make that trip to the 7-Eleven to pick up those gifts. I think, you know,
we thought it was Sears, Max.
It works.
But with so many retailers suggesting that we need to front load some of those purchases, it's a good chance the retail sales numbers through the end of this year start coming in pretty strong. Certainly stronger than what we might be expecting because we're front-loading a lot of those purchases. A sign that maybe we need to be careful as we look into the new year that some of the end of the season holiday data may not be as strong if we front-loaded a lot of those purchases. And so I think you really got to take the next quarter or so of data kind of in one big lump and go, okay, how did the holiday season overall look? Because I think we're going to, you know, change a little bit of when that spending happens. Maybe not quite so much of how much of that spending happens. And if anything, I think we're looking a little stronger this year than maybe how things have looked in the past.
But the fact is, Americans are excelling at shopping right now. And it's really helping to power the economy. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the program. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.